Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. The median price for a Central Ohio rose 7.1% to $180,000 in April, which is great for the seller. But that higher price is in part a function of a paucity of stock, and that's hard on the buyer, especially first-timers. We're talking about the housing shortage and rising prices in Central Ohio. Joining me is real estate analyst at Vogt Strategic Insights, Rob Vogt. Welcome back.
Thank you, Ann.
Also, realtor with Keller Williams, owner of the CIMAC Group, Cynthia McKenzie. Welcome back.
Thanks, Ann.
And loan officer with Helpbringer Mortgage Services, Andy Danick. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Ian.
The first question I wanted to ask maybe sound kind of overly dramatic, but in some places it definitely looks like it, is are we in a bubble? Rob Vogt?
Well, that's a tough question to answer, I think, Ann.
You never know until it pops.
Exactly. And, you know, we get a lot of questions from our clients on, are we on an apartment bubble? Have we built too many apartments? Are we going to have a lot of vacancies? Are prices rising so fast that eventually the buyers are going to stop? Do we have enough new product in order to satisfy the needs of a new home buyer or even existing home buyers? And I think the quick and easy answer right now is no, we're not at that bubble yet. Now, there's a lot of things going on nationally that could impact that decision. But if you look at all of the issues impacting Central Ohio, our positive job growth, our great economy, rising income levels, desirability of neighborhoods, I don't think we're quite there yet. And I still think we've got several or at least another good year of opportunities for the housing market here in Central Ohio.
Cynthia McKenzie, in some places it's more bubble-ish than others. And we're going to talk about that coming up. But Worthington, where you put a lot of your efforts, not all of them, but a lot of it, is one of those places. It feels bubble-ish there.
You know, I think we were all talking about this before we came in, and it's bubble-ish everywhere, from Grove City to Pickerington to Blacklick to Worthington, Columbus.
How do you advise then a seller on what to ask for their house?
You don't go back too far. Because okay. If you look back at sales from 1 year ago, you can't do that. You kind of look at the competition, what you're competing against and what's just gone into contract, and you put a good number on it. You still don't want to go too high because you don't want to sit on the market for 30 days in this environment. And then you put your guess on it, your educated guess, and the market will come and tell you if you're correct or not.
Right. And when it comes to loaning money for something, is that a concern, Andy?
It's always a concern to make sure that it's going to appraise for the value that they're trying to pay for. And in this market, a lot of people realize that it might not appraise. And so they're putting clauses into these contracts that say they will pay over whatever the appraised value is.
All right. So a lot of houses that are still underwater from the recession could these end up being those houses 10 years, 15 years down the road?
I don't think so, because we have really great buyers. The lenders have had to tighten up their strategies and what programs are available. So I was speaking with Cynthia earlier that we don't have all these folks going into these ARM products that shouldn't be in ARM products. We have
adjustable
buyers
rate mortgages.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We have buyers that are actually qualified, good credit, good jobs. They have down payment, and that's the key for avoiding what I believe happened, years ago.
You know, there are a lot of really good potential buyers out there, though, that have contingencies. They have a house they need to sell that maybe isn't in quite as desirable area of where they're going. What about that, Cynthia McKenzie? They're out of luck right now.
It's definitely a balancing act and trying to figure out how do you not move twice and not own two houses. And there's solutions for it. They're complicated and you have to put a little effort and planning into it, but they're possible.
Huh. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about this real estate market right now. It seems crazy. My first question was, are we in a bubble? And, of course, time will tell the answer to that question. But in the meantime, it's really, really good for sellers, and it's decent for people who are pre-approved with no contingencies, blah, blah, blah. If you have a story to tell about this, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You just heard from Cynthia McKenzie. She's a realtor with Keller Williams and owner of the CIMAC Group. Also, Andy Danek, he's a loan officer with Helpbringer Mortgage Services. And Rob Vogt, real estate analyst for Vogt Strategic Insights. 614-292-8513. Rob Vogt?
Well, I was just saying, Ann, that one of the challenges today for the buyers, if you're an existing homeowner, several years ago, even before the recession, well before the recession, we had a lot of new home choices that folks that lived in an existing house didn't have to go through the process of getting their house in contract to get another house because they had a new home choice. And right now, we don't have those new home choices in Central Ohio. Mostly due to a lot of other issues unrelated to the market, because clearly we have a very strong market. So, you know, it's that sort of that gap between we have this huge demand for new housing, yet we can't produce a house to meet that demand. And that is really one of the challenges here, not only in Central Ohio, but across the nation.
Nationally, housing starts, that is new builds, was down in April after, I guess, a decent opening in 2017. On a month-by-month basis, can we glean anything from that as it might pertain to Central Ohio? Rob?
Well, I think it's this gap between what it costs to build a new house and what people want. And as long as we have this gap and we can't bridge that gap, the land costs.
But usual, when you talk about a gap, the parallels would be what it costs to build a house versus what people are willing to pay.
Not necessarily what they're willing to pay, but what they can afford to pay.
Okay.
And I think that's the challenge, that when you talk to a new home builder today, that they can't build a new house for less than $230,000.
Which means they can't put it on the market,
right,
exactly, for less than $300,000.
Oh, well, yeah, right. The retail price might be $250,000.
Okay.
But if you look at the median price here in Central Ohio, there's a huge gap between that and what it costs for a new house. So you've got this huge demand for this new housing, yet no supply to meet that demand. So a lot of the buyers now are left with existing homes. And that's one of the reasons we have such pressure right now on the existing home market, is that these are much less expensive than a new home. So we've got to solve the problem on how do we build a more affordable home in different locations in Central Ohio.
Hmm. What happens in the appraisal process, Andy? How does that even – how does it work? When a bank decides, or a mortgage lender decides to, has to go in and appraise a property.
So that's a third party.
Yeah.
That goes out there and there's very strict regulations between the bank and the appraiser and how they can communicate. Again, because of what had happened back in 2007-06. So the appraisers will head out, they'll do their comps. And of course, it's very easy to find comps nowadays because of how quick things are selling.
Okay. But if you go back a year, as Cynthia McKenzie said, you don't go back a year?
No, there's no need to go back a year. You're literally seeing – I haven't seen comps that are maybe older than 4 or 5 months.
And that's unusual.
That's pretty unusual.
Wow.
It is. It's – if you go back 6 months to a year, you're going to have old – probably about 7 to 20% – lower on house prices in some neighborhoods. I think there's going to be some challenges where neighborhoods haven't had recent sales at all.
Because people are just not moving.
Right. There's a neighborhood locally that usually sells between 40 and 50 houses a year. Year to date, they're at 4. And there's probably 3 in contract right now. So it'll be real interesting to see how those appraisals come in.
What do you make of that, 40 or 50 a year and year to date for?
I honestly do not have any idea. And it wasn't a harsh winter, so that's not like they were digging out. I think it's just random. I do think you're going to see in the same neighborhood probably a late season.
Okay.
But the neighborhood up the road has had more sales in the first 3 months of the year than they did probably all of last year. So
Yeah. Is any of that paralysis perhaps associated with people being worried that they won't find another place to live if they
Absolutely.
Sell?
For Absolutely.
Sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's the perception of what's available to them and does it meet their expectations. And, you know, I hate getting back to the whole issue of new homes, but if you don't have a new home choice in Central Ohio, you're going to stay where you are if you can't find something else in a comparable neighborhood. So I think that's one of the reasons that we have this paralysis on selling houses right now is that we don't have enough choices for people to move on to. One other factor, which is a little bit interesting, is the fact that we're moving less than we did historically.
And that's just a larger trend.
That's right. That's right. So it affects the apartment industry. It also affects the for sale home industry. Folks aren't getting transferred as much. They're staying more permanent.
That, you know, that's kind of was a short-lived trend even. I mean, if you look over the course of human history, it only lasted about 40 or 50 years.
Yeah, that's right. And it does impact housing. We made a lot of housing choices back then based on the fact that folks were moving once every couple of years.
Another thing that I find interesting is what people expect in a starter home. Mm-hmm. Now, I know I watch too many of those silly shows on HGTV, but it's ridiculous sometimes. Their first home, they're spending $800,000 on a first home, and they don't look I don't know. I mean, they've been living in their mom's basement or something. But what about that? The expectations are so high.
And I do think their expectations are all over. So if you're in a starter neighborhood in a starter price home, maybe, which is now closer to $200,000, you might be looking at a two-bedroom, one-bath, three-bedroom, one-bath. And oftentimes, some of the younger people have been renting three-bedroom, two-full-bath apartments that are pretty modern and nice. So they've got to take a step back and go down to one bath, which mm-hmm. is a little hard to take. Other times, you've got to sacrifice in location. So I know when I bought my first house 20 years ago, I so wanted to be in the Worthington School District, and I really wanted to be walkable to Old Worthington. Mm-hmm. At my $125 price point, that was never going to happen. So I went outside of 270, lived there a few years, and then moved into Old Worthington area. And we're seeing kind of the same thing. A lot of people start their search and say, I really want to live in Grandview or Old Worthington or German Village. And they might go out a little bit with the intent of moving in 3 to 5 years.
Yeah. And how is it trying to tell people you can't afford that? That's not going to work. Andy?
It's funny you ask that question because I have several buyers I can think of right now where I just have to have an honest conversation and let them know that this is what you should do. This is where you should be as far as your house and what you can afford. Because you can always on paper, the banks unfortunately will let you borrow more than what you really will should be borrowing for the fact that you know they don't take into consideration your cell phone and your cable and food and all those necessities that it takes when you do move into a house. But the buyers, when you have that conversation with them and let them know most likely as your first home, you're not going to be there more than 7, 8, 9 years. It's okay. This is a great way to start. Just getting them to see that and not to see homes that are above what they can afford.
Uh-huh.
Because once you start seeing that threshold of, boy, but I can afford this for another $100 or $200 a month, I like to reel them back in and say, but that's a lot of money over time that it could hurt you.
Yeah, the best advice I ever got was from my lender for my first house. I could qualify for $100,000, but I ended up buying for $60,000.
That was
this
great advice.
A long time ago.
That was great
and
advice.
If I had kept that house in Clintonville, I'd be rich today. All right, we're going to continue our conversation about this crazy housing market in Central Ohio and, you know, what it looks like across the country and how Ohio compares and contrasts. If you have a question or comment, we'll get to those calls, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can check out our Facebook page and post your question or comment there. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. In some communities in Central Ohio, the housing market is white hot and the buyers are the ones often getting burned. We're talking about strategies for finding a home to buy during this difficult period. Still with us, real estate analyst with Vogt Strategic Insights, Rob Vogt, realtor with Keller Williams, owner of the SIMAC Group, Cynthia McKenzie, and loan officer with Helpbringer Mortgage Services, Andy Danick. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Let's talk about new home building. We've got a call that's, you know, basically asking what I want to ask. Al in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Al. Oops. Okay, we just dropped two calls out of nowhere. Don't know why that happened. So try calling back, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. So let's talk a little bit more about why new homes are so expensive and why developers can't find their way to building what we think of as a starter home.
Well, you know, one of the interesting things is, and that one of the trends that we see emerging is this density issue that, you know, apartment builders address it because they can get high density on certain sites. Single family developers don't have that luxury.
Why? And,
well, I think it's because suburban jurisdictions want to have these big houses on big lots in their area. And the fact of the matter is that as time goes on, there's not going to be this demand for these big houses on big lots. And we have to educate suburban officials on the fact that the trends are changing and we've got to recognize those changes to provide the kind of housing that people want. So I think it's an education process, the fact that they have to understand how these trends are changing and the fact that people don't want big houses on big lots anymore. It's just, I think that's a fallacy to a certain degree. And now that's one of the big reasons we can't see a lower priced house in the suburbs is because of these suburban requirements.
Is there any sense that the local zoning ordinances can change to respond to this?
Well, I think we're beginning to see it. I think they're beginning to realize that if they're going to keep their residents happy and give them the kinds of housing choices that they want, they need to make those changes. You know, we all realize that places like Westerville and Worthington and Dublin are aging, that these homeowners are that used to be in their 30s and 40s are now in their 50s and 60s, and they want to stay in that community, but they don't have that housing choice because we can't build the kind of dense housing that they're looking for. So over time, I think we're beginning to see them realize that we've got to make changes to the way we're approving our housing and the types of housing that's being approved to give people the choices that they want. So hopefully that'll bring the cost down of housing.
Because builders want to do it. Yeah, Andy?
So if you look at Clintonville, for instance, it seems like that's like one of the hot areas, if you ask Cynthia. And you look at the style of those homes, those are medium-sized homes, maybe 1,000 to 1,400, 1,500, 1,600 square foot homes. They're not real large yards, but it's a very kind of a quaint, close, nice community. Mm-hmm. And these young buyers love that. And so it would be great if builders could kind of understand this is the this is where buyers are headed, and to start looking at building communities more like that. As Rob said, the large homes, the large lots, there's I don't believe there's just as much demand for that.
And you do think about the land we have in Worthington, mm-hmm. United Methodist Home.
Sitting
how
there,
would that
still
be taken if we said, hey, we're going to put 400 houses there that are close, tight, that people want? The current residents, the school system, is going to be like, no.
Right.
So I think there's more to it than just the restrictions. I think it's keeping the community happy with what they're used to.
Keeping it in balance.
Yeah. But you're real familiar with that area. Could you imagine the city of Worthington, the residents saying, yeah, we want 400 more houses.
And the right. congestion and the
right.
the problems that come with that. Yeah. And the traffic.
Right. And in Clintonville, same issue? Not necessarily.
Let's see. They took down the Olympic swimming pool, and they're putting apartments.
Mm-hmm.
So there are some developments happening like that.
Okay. Let's see. Abdul in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Abdul.
Hi, and thank you. I appreciate it. I like you. So my question
Thanks.
Is this, like, if you're buying a cash for a house, like Columbus, Ohio.
Cash,
whatever,
yeah.
Like, Yeah, and you don't want to go to the loan, and that's that. Which way to go better? It's like a, and you get your own land. Let's say you buy a land, and then you want to build it up, or you buy an existing house. Which one is better? So you don't want to go to the loan. You're paying off the cash, and you know your budget and everything. So which way better to go? That's my question.
Okay.
Well, certainly there's less maintenance costs on a new house, and I think that's one of the attractions that a new house provides is that an old house has a lot of things that go wrong with it and that you have to do that. On the other hand, it's tough to find a vacant piece of land that you can buy in a location that you want to live in. So, you know, I hate to answer it depends, but really, what do you really want out of a house? What kind of location do you want? How close is it to where you work? How close is it to where you shop? Is it close to your church and your social network? So, you know, it really depends on what you're looking for. But if you can find the lot in the right location and build it for the price you can afford, then do it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Abdul, thanks a lot for that. Fred in Grove City, you're on the air. Hi, Fred.
Hey, that's me. How are you doing?
Good.
Very good. My question is, my wife and I are planning on retiring August next year. We have been living for 24 years, I believe it is, in a beautiful old farmhouse southwest of Grove City near Darbydale, which is not a good necessarily real estate market. But the home is very warm and open. We've been told by real estate people that it probably could go for a lot of money.
Uh-huh.
And one realtor, well, a lot of money, maybe three. One realtor is telling us, asking us to examine the possibilities of an auction. I was wondering what.
Yeah, I've heard about that. What do they tell you about it, Fred?
That they think that the home, which is like...
No, I mean, what do they tell you about what an auction is? What do they... I mean, I know what an auction is, but how would it work?
Well, I've been to some. I actually went to a property down in the state forest near Chillicothe, and this home, which was really not much of a much, sold for an exorbitant amount because people wanted it. So it's an auction. People, it's advertised.
So it's like an in-person type of auction like we think. Okay.
Yeah.
And you know, Cynthia McKenzie, what do you think about that? And also talk about this other kind of emerging trend of in these really hot, white hot markets where they're going online.
Right. So can't speak to your property specifically, but I have seen some auctions work very well for certain properties. And I think it's not a bad idea to get two opinions, you know, one from an auctioneer and one from a realtor. In essence, this market has been functioning almost like an auction. So we may put a house online on the MLS on maybe, let's say, Wednesday, start showings on Friday, take bids through Sunday, and make a decision on Monday. And that gives everybody a chance to get through, all of the buyers to get through, make their best offer. It's not like an auction where anyone can see what someone's bidding.
Right.
It's more of a closed bid process.
Silent. Auction.
Yeah. Closed auction. Yeah. So I think it just depends on what you're trying to accomplish. And I think with an auction, you can set a minimum bid, because if you don't set a minimum bid, maybe that 300 sells for 250 if it's a bad rainy day. I don't know how it works, but.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
I think one important thing, though, for the auction process, Ann, is to make sure you understand the fees associated with that. That there are transaction fees, and just make sure that you have a complete understanding of what those fees would be if you're going to go through the auction process.
Okay. All right, Fred. Good luck and have fun in retirement. Now I'm going to try to get Al on the phone here. Al in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Ann. How are you?
Good.
Very good. This question is for, I believe it's Rob. I believe it's about 10 minutes ago you'd mentioned that, you know, the average cost of a new home in Central Ohio is about $230,000 or thereabouts.
$180,000, but yeah.
That it might be cheaper to just buy an existing home than to build a new one. But what I wanted to know is just understand a little bit more about what are the factors then that are driving, particularly in a relatively low interest rate environment, that are driving the cost of new home construction here in Central Ohio. I mean, I know that it depends on where you're building, but typically on average, the new home construction is really going up. What are the key factors that are driving that growth in price?
Okay.
So that's my question, and I'll take it off the air.
All
Thank
right.
you.
Thank you, Al.
Well, there's a wide variety of costs associated with new homes, not only in Central Ohio, but across the country. The cost of land is one. Impact fees, tap fees, the cost to develop the land, the sewer improvements, labor costs, lumber costs. I mentioned earlier that the cost of lumber has gone up 30% over the past couple of weeks because of the situation we're in with Canada right now. So it's just physically impossible to build a house for anything less than an asking price of $230,000. It just you just simply can't do it.
So, any house.
Any house, any new home. So we've got to find a way to bring those costs down, and some of the ways to do it is increasing the density. You can put and that addresses the cost of land. So by increasing the density, you can put more houses on it, which reduces your land costs, which helps you bring the high price of the house down. Impact fees is another one that if you have $10,000 or $20,000 impact fees for a house, that just is passed on to the buyer and makes that house that much more expensive. So there's a wide variety of different fees associated with the development of new housing that causes the price to go up quite considerably.
Okay. Thanks a lot. Email from Dan says, I keep hearing about Westgate as an up-and-coming neighborhood. Is this true? What are your thoughts on this area?
Westgate is west of Columbus, and it's kind of a charming neighborhood. And I think it's always been a very popular neighborhood for buyers. It reminds me a little bit of Colonial Hills. There's a neighborhood park. It's quite nice, and it's very popular.
Yeah. I think, Westgate's got it's got a great central park like Goodale Park. It's got a variety of housing types throughout it. It's got good stability. It's got proximity to a lot of different options. If you like gambling, it's near the casino.
That's right.
But from a commute from the Westgate into downtown Columbus, it's a 10-minute ride.
Right.
And commute times has a lot to do with where people are buying right now.
Are prices going up there as well?
Yes.
Yes.
In fact, I've heard that houses there are selling as fast as any good neighborhood in Central Ohio right now.
Wow. In Columbus City Schools.
For sure.
So, all right.
You've seen a lot of folks buying some of these older homes in the Westgate. I've been online looking and making them look beautiful inside. And so as you hop online and take a look at the neighborhood, you can see some of the other houses aren't up to par yet, but it's an indicator that people are willing to go. And if the house looks great, they'll buy it. And knowing that other investors or other people might come in and start doing the same thing, revitalizing that neighborhood.
You know, talking about first-time home buyers and that kind of a thing, why aren't they eager to take something that needs work?
Money. If you buy a $200,000 house and it doesn't need much work, you can know what your payment's going to be. If you buy a $170,000 house that needs $30,000 worth of work,
where's it coming from?
Yeah, where's that coming from? Whereas to borrow the money, money's still cheap. I don't know when rates are going to go up, Rob.
Yeah, no, I don't either. And also all those home improvement shows, Ann, that you mentioned earlier that gets everybody fired up about that idea. They say, hey, I can do that.
Yeah, hey, no. Those things are so unreal.
And running to Home Depot every weekend for a small project can add up to $300 to $1,000.
Who's ever gone there and not spent $500, you know? It's like Costco.
Well, that's a conversation I have with clients when they're asking me about a house, and I'll get online and take a look at it, and it could be an absolute disaster. And I've asked them, you know, what's your experience in just stripping wallpaper, or have you changed a toilet out, or do you know how to paint? And you would be shocked. A lot of them said, well, we've never done any of that. Not that they couldn't, but you want them to be realistic about it.
Right. Right.
And to your earlier point, disposable income might be going to student debt.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
More than, say, 20 years ago.
Yes.
Was the case. Let's see, Andy in Clintonville, you're on the air. Hi, Andy. You live there, but you have a question about it. What's up?
Yes. Well, I've been listening off the air, and I thought of something else as well. I remember when I was looking for a home, a realtor kept telling me, don't worry, if it needs work, you've got the home inspection and you've got the home warranty. Neither of which were very satisfactory in the long run. But anyhow, concerning the Clintonville market and maybe why there's not much inventory, and there might be other neighborhoods like it, but I've been living in Beachwold in a starter home for longer than I wanted to, and the reason was to stay in the area in Clintonville or Beachwold and get a few hundred square feet more and a real full second bathroom, oftentimes you're looking at an $80,000 to $100,000 difference in price. And so that's kind of kept me on the sidelines. And with the market the way it is now, it might have even exacerbated the difference in price just to, you know, move up to a slightly larger house. And I understand there are different locations in Clintonville and Beachwald are going to command different prices, but was wondering if what your comments were on that and if you've seen that in other neighborhoods in Columbus.
Yeah, Cynthia McKenzie.
So if I'm understanding correctly, he wants to know, you know, why is it so much to get just a little bit more in the neighborhood?
Yeah.
And perhaps he doesn't really realize what his house is currently worth. It might be worth more than he is anticipating it to be worth. But yeah, Clintonville is
fine. So
relatively
speaking, it wouldn't be that much
more. It might be a $30,000 gap maybe, but it sounds like he's seeing an $80,000 gap. And in Clintonville especially, you could take the same exact house and move it across High Street, and it's worth a different amount. You can move it south of North Broadway, it's worth a different amount. So there's so many variations to try to compare. You can't, it's very difficult to say one extra bathroom in Clintonville will be $30,000 because you can't really compare one house to one house.
It's what street, it's what side of high, blah, blah, blah.
What condition, and windows, roof, you know, what kind of condition.
Okay. All right. Thanks a lot for that call. We are going to continue our conversation. We're talking about this crazy, I keep calling it crazy, real estate market in Central Ohio. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, and you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about the decline in properties for sale and the climbing prices in the housing market in Central Ohio. Still with us is real estate analyst with Vogt Strategic Insights, Rob Vogt, realtor with Keller Williams, owner of the SIMAC Group, Cynthia McKenzie, and loan officer with Helpbringer Mortgage Services, Andy Danick. Questions, comments, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You know, Rob, you brought up something at the beginning that we didn't get to on the air, and that was the issue of how far people are willing to drive to get the price they want. What's significant about that issue?
Well, I think back in the 2000s, there was always this perception that you had to drive further to get a lower price for a new house. And the comment would be, you know, how far do you have to drive to afford the house that you want? That's not true as much anymore because of the fact that housing is so expensive anywhere you go. Any new housing is tough. So that's why I was kind of curious on where people are. How far are people willing to go in order to find a house that they really want? Are some of the satellite communities like a London, Ohio, or Lancaster, or Newark, are those places where are folks going that far and commuting back in for a job? Or are they saying, I'm going to stay put because I can't find the kind of housing I want within a reasonable distance?
Or they don't want the drive.
Right.
Because the drive, I just had this conversation with a client.
It costs money.
Wear and tear on your car. There's gas. Yeah. There's just your time. What is your time worth to spend an hour one way in the car?
And millennials increasingly are saying, yeah, way too expensive.
Right. And I also think sometimes it's your frame of reference. Like if we have people coming in from out of state and they're moving here from Chicago, you know, my perception, if you're from Columbus, you don't want to drive more than 20 minutes because that would be awful.
Yeah.
If you're from Chicago, L.A., and I say, you know, what kind of commute time are you okay with? They'll say an hour. So they are the people that would be willing to go out from what I'm seeing. But yeah, a lot of the younger first-time homebuyers, they really want to be walkable communities close to town.
Right. Let's see. Okay. Doug in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Doug.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks.
So I guess my comment is this, and when we bought our house in Old Oaks about 20 years ago, we bought below our means, knowing that we were going to be getting an old house and we would have to have money to do it all together. We took out a 15-year mortgage, but we figured out how to make that extra payment spread out throughout the year. So we took our 15-year mortgage, and we were actually able to pay off the house in about 12. So the good news for that for us was, you know, we worked on the house, and we saw our neighborhood value rise. So we were able to take the money that we saved, we put a down payment on a house in Berwick, and we've been able to do the same thing there, be able to buy a house for a low cost, do the different things that we need to do, and been really happy with both houses. So thanks. I'll take it off the air, but I just thought that's a really good way to try and do it when you're trying to get in that extra payment to bring down the length of your mortgage.
You know, I think it's interesting. Thank you, Doug, that he's talking about really doing what you ought to do when you buy a house is buy what you can afford to take care of.
Well, on the other hand, a financial planner might say that that's awfully cheap money for a mortgage, though, that you could use it for other purposes. So, I mean, there are tails on both sides.
What do you mean? Like, I mean, obviously, it's been a good investment for them, though.
Well, in this situation, certainly right. 7 or 8 years ago, he may not be making that same statement that it was a good investment. But financial planners will talk about what are the other alternatives that you can use your money for to get a better return on your money.
Here's something I wanted to ask about. And Doug, by the way, thank you for that call. Appreciate it. Why and how in the world are people still underwater anywhere in Central Ohio with the way the prices are going?
I'm not so sure how many people are actually underwater. We have bounced back and exceeded where we were at the low, at least on the averages.
In Central Ohio.
Okay. And I think sometimes people borrow money along the way to fund other parts of their lives. So maybe someone's lived in their house for 15 years. They bought it for 180, and 15 years later, they owe 200. Maybe they borrowed a home equity loan to afford
college.
Someone
gave it to them, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure, you can still obtain an equity line. Some places you can go up to 95% loan to value. And so when you try to then turn around and sell, you have expenses with selling. You might be bringing money to the table.
Mm-hmm. And one other thing, Ann, is neighborhoods. We've talked about that in the past. There are still neighborhoods in Central Ohio where prices are not experiencing the kind of increase that they are in places like Worthington and Arlington and Bexley and so on.
And should people be looking at those? I mean, are there
absolutely,
some that,
absolutely.
They have prospects?
Absolutely.
That anything inside the Beltway?
That's right. There are nuggets out there right now in fringe neighborhoods that represent great opportunities for a home buyer.
Jason in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Jason.
Hey, good morning, everybody. So I had a question that was kind of alluded to a little bit earlier. My wife and I may be looking to sell our home here in the next year or two in order to upgrade to a larger home. But much like most folks, we're not really able to carry two mortgages. We've got twins on the way. So
congratulations.
Thank you. We're going to quickly outgrow a three-bedroom home in City of Columbus, but Dublin Schools, and would like to stay in sort of the same, close to the same area, but the prospect of having two twin one-year-olds trying to sell and then subsequently buy a house is terrifying. Any help?
Sounds like you'll just be packing things in garbage bags at that point trying to get out. What do you think, Cynthia McKenzie?
Well, first of all, I believe you can do it. You know, adrenaline and that kind of sense of purpose will get you through it. And the gift of this market is the buyers come all at once. So like I talked about earlier, if you can get your house ready to go on the market on, say, Thursday, Friday, get out of town for the weekend, let all the buyers come while you're out of town so you're not in and out, in and out, and then hopefully come back on Monday with lots of offers to review. And I've also seen, because it's a seller's market, so once you get those offers, you make sure that those buyers are flexible, and you may be lucky enough to have a first-time home buyer that's in a month-to-month lease.
So that you can have a contingency.
Right. So in a perfect scenario for, I forget his name, Rob?
Yeah, Jason.
Jason. He would get that offer, and he would say, great, I'm now going to go find a house to buy with this circumstance. So we've seen a lot of flexible closings. So maybe this perfect buyer says, I'll close with you, and then you know, you can have 60 days to go find a house. But if he was to go onto the market now, he wouldn't be on the market for a month having to keep up with everything.
It's trickier doing the buying than it is to do the selling.
Right now it is, yes.
Okay. Jason, good luck with that. And that's really cool. Twins are awesome. I'm going to the next person, Heather in Grandview. You're on the air. Hi, Heather.
Hi, Ann. I just have 2 points that I want to make. Okay. First is I think that we need to change this idea that houses are investments. I don't know why we don't think of housing the way we think of other essentials of life, right? We want food to be cheap. We should want housing to be cheap. And now we have these central planners on zoning boards who are not able to keep up with the changing market. And as your guest said, we have to educate these zoning boards. They're never going to be able to keep up with what the market wants. I think we have to tear down these barriers because the cost is that people don't have housing. They can't live where they want to live. They can't have their kids live in their neighborhoods. I live in Grandview. And granted, we're all looking at housing prices and salivating, trying to think about selling our house.
But
that's not what it should be for. That's a fluke if you can make a lot of money on your house. It shouldn't be a strategy. That's my
point. Gotcha. Okay. I think Heather makes a really interesting point because I happen to live in a neighborhood where a lot of people for a long time were moving back. It's where they grew up and they bought a house or they bought their parents' house. And I don't think they can afford it now. I mean, that's not really that realistic. So what about that attitude, you know, about housing? I mean, do you talk about that at all, Andy?
In what sense, Ian?
And when you're talking to people about what they want, you know, when you're talking to people about what you can afford and that kind of a thing, does the issue of making an investment and I want to make money off of this and that kind of a thing come up very often?
It is rare that that would come up. It's a great point. But the buyers right now are just so interested in getting into a home that they, you know, that they enjoy and they can see themselves in that I don't think they realize down the road this is going to be an investment. We're going to make, you know, $100,000 in 10 years from this home.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a conversation
that
I've had
it.
A lot. No.
Yeah.
On the other hand, those folks that had to write checks for $50,000 or $60,000 8 years ago might argue that point.
So. That's a good point, Rob. Very, very good point.
What do you mean by that, the folks that had to write checks?
Well, they were underwater to get out of the house.
Right.
You know, so you have to look at it at least from a perspective that it's going to be some sort of money.
You want to make money. You don't want
right.
to lose money.
Right.
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 And I think oftentimes it accidentally becomes an investment. And if people come to me and they want to buy an investment property, it's a completely different strategy than if they want to buy a house and just want to do everything they can to minimize what happened in 08.
I know we're here to talk about residential housing, but has this market, this residential market such as it is, has it affected commercial real estate at all? Is there any kind of connection there?
That's an interesting question, and I don't think it has terribly so, although there's been a lot of commercial sites that have come up that are now being redeveloped
as residential. Yeah.
Right. And I think we're going to see a trend over the coming years where a large shopping center that maybe, you know, 80% vacant is uh-huh. redeveloped into a mixed use that might have a combination of less retail but more apartments, condominiums, and small homes built around kind of a central commercial area. So I think there's going to be some great opportunities coming up for redevelopment of these types of properties.
Okay. James in London, you're on the air. Hi, James.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks.
Hey, I have a question in terms of we aging in terms of population. Are ranch-style homes going to be more popular and obviously more expensive in that case versus a two-story, which if you buy a ranch, you would eliminate up and down stairs. So
right.
how is that going to – does it or will it apply in the future in terms of value of homes if you have a ranch versus a two-story or a multi-story dwelling?
Cynthia?
I think supply and demand always figures into price, and we have, at least in a lot of areas in Columbus – a scarcity of ranches, and it does seem like dollar per square foot, the ranches do sell for more. That may be because it's less expensive to build up than out, and you're taking up so much of that land when you're doing a ranch.
Uh-huh.
But ranches definitely have their own market, empty nesters, families that just prefer them, whether they have young kids or not. And they, to speak to the earlier point, there's the people that have lived in a suburb for 25 years, they're empty nesters. They don't want to leave their community, but they might not need that four-bedroom, two-and-a-half-bath, two-story, 2,500-square-feet house, and they would love to stay within their same community in a 1,600-square-foot ranch.
Yeah.
One of the most successful Central Ohio home builders, Epcon, is building a ranch-style condominium unit, which just reflects the demand for that type of housing. So I think we are going to see an increased demand for one-level type units mm-hmm. over time.
Okay, James, thanks a lot for that call. Appreciate it. Josh, who is new to Columbus. Where are you, Josh? I'm looking here. Okay. Josh, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi. How are you?
Fine. Thank you.
Good. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
So my questions will be kind of twofold. As a transplant, having been in Columbus for about a year, my family's still learning the area, getting an idea as to where we actually do want to purchase. And so I'd like to know if you have any resources or suggestions as how we might be able to go about actually getting a real good feel for the areas. I work from home, so exposure is limited. That's one. And then secondly, we've seen some communities, such as the Preserve in New Albany, where you're in a phenomenal school district with Columbus City taxes. And should we consider that, or is there a great concern that 3 years into it, we might suddenly be in New Albany taxes and have a much higher tax expense?
Thoughts? Thumbnail of the Central Ohio housing market?
Well, I guess to answer his first question, Ann, I think if I was trying to get familiar with an area, I would spend a lot of times in the different neighborhoods, going out to restaurants and going to a bar or just walking the streets and mm-hmm. getting a sense of how it feels and what it looks like. I think the second question he was asking about was whether or not his area would become annexed into another community, which would change his taxes. I don't think that's going to happen in Central Ohio.
It's pretty much annexed
to death.
Yeah,
we have agreements in place that would prevent that kind of activity. So I don't think he has to worry about that.
Yeah.
On the first question, there are several publications. You can pick them up at grocery stores that will tell you all of the events that happen in and around Columbus. That's the first thing.
Second thing is 614 and Columbus Monthly.
Mm-hmm. And then the other item you'd want to look up is start with your local farmers markets. I mean, those are just phenomenal ways to get
an idea
of what that community looks like. Who comes out for the farmers market?
That's a really great idea.
And I don't know if he's a homeowner yet.
He said it doesn't sound like they were. They were waiting.
I think I would call your favorite realtor and maybe start a search for that type of houses that you would like, and go park your car and walk around the neighborhoods that have houses that match your wants and needs and get to know that. And then I also love Columbus Underground, their Facebook page.
Yeah, that's right.
They have great events on there.
Great. All right, Josh, welcome to Columbus. Glad you're listening. We're just about out of time, but an email from Bill, and he says, because it is such a strong seller's market, I am contemplating selling my 2-bedroom, 1-bath home in Upper Arlington as a for sale by owner to avoid the 3% commission to real estate agent. And, obviously, you have a vested interest in it, but all things mm-hmm. being equal, for some people that might be a viable option, right, Cynthia?
Absolutely. I think it's really what your comfort level is and what you want to accomplish. Some people like to do things on their own, and they get a sense of pride in doing that. I think this market is the best market to utilize a real estate agent because you want to get as much exposure to get the highest possible price. Right now is a market that you may get an outrageous price for your house, but you've got to bring the whole market. And I think that's where a for sale by owner might not be able to bring the entire market to their house at one time. So good luck.
All right. That is all the time we have. Cynthia McKenzie, thanks for joining us. Appreciate your time.
Thanks, Ann.
Cynthia McKenzie, realtor with Keller Williams, owner of the CIMAC Group. Also, Andy Danick, loan officer with Helpbringer Mortgage Services. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ann.
And Rob Vogt, real estate analyst for Vogt Strategic Insights. Thanks to you as well.
You're welcome, Ann.
Thanks to the AllSides staff, producer Michael DeBonis, assistant producer Shyla Knott, AllSides interns Kelly Rudolph, Kyle McKinnon, Aaron Kinkley, and Owen Doherty, with video production by Rich Blue and Amber Blue. Alan DeCenzo is a composer of our theme music, WOSU News and Public Affairs Director Mike Thompson, Radio Operations Director Kevin Petrulla, Senior Broadcast Technician Eric French. Be sure to like All Sides on Facebook. Follow the show on Twitter at WOSU All Sides. You can follow me, too. at Ann Fisher, WOSU. That's it. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.